So I do realize I'm at risk of being pigeonholed as the minister who always tells a story about the beginnings of the world. For those of you who weren't here last month, I told the story of Eve and the apple that time. See, in the beginning of a ministry, these are the stories that come to mind. We are making a new world. These riffs on the stories of Genesis. Genesis, that's a word that simply means beginnings. These stories come to mind so easily right now, so I hope you'll bear with me. And next month, I'll do my very best to offer a story that takes place somewhere other than the beginning of time. I'll really try, I promise. Between the services, somebody said, oh yeah, you're going to tell Exodus next time. I don't know, we'll see. The story I share today, it's actually on my list of the top 10 stories that all Unitarian Universalists should know. And by should, I mean it sure would be handy if we all had this story as a part of our common vocabulary. If we could say to each other, in times of challenge, or even just in times of new beginnings, where there's lots of excitement and good energy, remember, friends, we are partners in the big and important job of finishing the world. And even if we get irritated with each other, not if, but when, even when we think the other isn't doing enough or doing it the way we'd like, even when our heart breaks for all that remains undone, even on those days, we are partners, and we can't give up because our partner is counting on us. Last month, using that story of Eve and the apple as a jumping-off point, I talked about how humans are capable of both blessing and brokenness. And I said that the hope of living into the blessing was in our willingness to walk together on the journey of life. I might just as well have said, our hope lies in our capacity to be partners in finishing the world. Now, probably in that service, but definitely a few other times since my ministry began way back on the 1st of August, decades ago, right? I've stood at this pulpit and made the claim that Unitarian Universalism is a covenantal rather than creedal faith. And this is where I want to pick up the conversation about us humans and our nature. Now, there are two words in that claim that I've been making about our tradition that I'm thinking might just be a little religious lingo-y. And because that's a thing that's sometimes hard for ministers to gauge, I thought it would be good just to get a little sense. So, creed. Do we know what creed means? Kind of. Not the band. From my theological dictionary, a creed is a formal statement of beliefs. Pretty simple. So to be a creedal faith, then, is to be organized around a shared sense of beliefs. This is the way that most Christian, most Muslim, and probably some other religious communities organize themselves. Around a shared sense of belief. In our 500-ish years as a definable strand of religion, Unitarians and Universalists have nearly always resisted this way of organizing ourselves. Just as one example from our history, in his Labor Day sermon, Mark told us about the dissenters of the 17th century England, people who, among other acts of dissent from the status quo, they rejected the requirement to consent to the Book of Common Prayer as the whole and only truth. So at a certain point, these dissenters, they decided to organize. They figured that working together, they could better resist the state-established dogma. However, their unity, and therefore their power, was threatened when it became clear that their main and perhaps only point of agreement was that they disagreed with everyone else. So in that moment, they could have given up and gone their separate ways. But lucky for us, they decided they'd stop worrying so much about what beliefs they held in common and instead talk about their shared commitments. And as a result, they sowed the seeds of what would soon become English Unitarianism, the seeds of what would help harvest American Unitarianism and today's Unitarian Universalism. This way of being together across differences of beliefs, based in shared promises, we might call this covenantal. And it has been affirmed time and again throughout our religious history. So, covenant. That's probably a religious lingo-y word, right? Do we know kind of what covenant means? Kind of.
I agree with your definition.
Right. So generally, covenant describes the promises between two or more people, the agreements that a group of people have made for how they will be together, not what they believe, but how they will be together and to what ends. It describes a kind of mutual accountability based in love and loyalty. As the Reverend Kirk Lodeman Copeland at First Universalist in Denver puts it, saying that we are covenantal describes how we come together not around a shared orthodoxy. Orthodoxy means right belief, but rather a shared orthopraxy, that is, right practice. We spoke the words of a covenant earlier in the service. You might recall, this is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Now you might notice that though these are simple statements, the fulfillment of these promises can be no easy task. Just start from the beginning. Dwell together in peace. Now surely we find moments of peace together. But anyone who has done more than a pass-through in any given congregation will tell you that our churches can sometimes be anything but peaceful. And to seek the truth in love. Mark was getting to the challenge of this intent last week, right? How our desire for the truth can end up in conflict with our desire to be loving and to help one another. How often have we intended to be helpful, only to realize that we're just the opposite? How often do we stumble, unsure what to say or offer in a time of need? How often do we fail to ask our own partners for the help that we truly need? These are not straightforward things. The promises of a covenant never really are. After all, they are the promises that we make as we discern our piece of this big project, right? This finishing the world. They are the promises we make so that we might call forth more wholeness, more healing, more unity, more justice, and more love. These could never be simple things. The promises of a covenant are truly so big and so important that they anticipate their own impossibility. We will not always live up to them. And so part of what it means to be a covenantal tradition is to acknowledge that we will sometimes miss the mark. We will sometimes be more broken than blessed. And our covenant says, when this is true, we will keep coming back together to repair where we've broken our vows and to begin again. This is one of the things that makes a covenant different than, say, a contract or even just a simple agreement. And these two outline the rules and expectations of a relationship. And sometimes people will ask me, why can't we just use those more accessible terms? But in a contract, when somebody breaks the agreement, the contract is dissolved, and often the relationship it constituted is too. But in a covenant, the steady faithfulness to the relationship itself is the point. Regardless of whether or not one or more of the parties misses the mark on those lofty ideals. Our covenant affirms that human life is not made rich or meaningful by never making mistakes or falling short, despite the urgings of those among us with perfectionist tendencies, of which I'm definitely not a part. Human life is created in the confusion and chaos of trying to do something difficult but important. It is created in the messiness and the brokenness that, when matched with faithfulness, humility, and love, is followed by healing and resurrection. Human life is made in the persistent return, in the renewal, in the rebirth, and in the transformation. Now, often when we talk about covenant in our churches, we are talking about the tangible list of behavioral agreements we've made with some subgroup or another. We have covenants in committees, in RE classrooms, in social groups, in learning communities, or even between ministers, as Mark and I will be sharing next week. We also have a covenant as a whole congregation, the promises that we make to and with one another as a whole church. And then we also have a covenant between and among UU congregations. That's what the principles actually are. They're a covenant between and among congregations. The board just recently updated its covenant. It has things like assume the best intentions, come to meetings prepared, and my personal favorite, have good snacks. These are all very important promises that clarify a shared intent of how the board will work together over the coming year in their shared goals. They demonstrate the practice of making and keeping covenant in the particular. But all of these particular examples of covenant do not necessarily keep us engaged with those underlying ideas of covenant, this philosophy I've been sharing about that a covenantal way of doing religion describes, or the theological implications of calling ourselves a covenantal rather than creedal tradition. And so sometimes we Unitarian Universalists, we can miss out on the richness and depth of our own faith tradition. But the power of our covenantal tradition is that it isn't just about these particular promises we make amongst a particular group of us. The power and possibility of our covenantal faith is that covenant could be an entire way of life, an entire way of being and living in the world, a way that considers all of us, and I do mean all, the whole world, across all time and all space, could be partners in this big task of finishing the world. I wonder what such a wide understanding of covenant would mean for all of us in our lives, in our real lives, every day. What might we be able to do if we were more committed to the wholeness and fullness of our relationships with all other beings than we were concerned about our differences of belief? How might making such a commitment to the health of our partnership change our relationships with our friends, our family members, our spouses, our allies, our neighbors, our employers and employees? How would it impact the strangers we pass on the street? How we relate with our so-called enemies, or those we consider to be on the other side of some line or another? How might a call to covenant inspire us to reach out, to seek, to preserve, and to strengthen all human relationships, which is all human life. At the heart of our covenantal tradition is this great idea that our very humanness will be defined by, is actually created by, the promises that we make, that we break, and that we renew with one another. Our very nature is created by the ways we walk together in partnership with others, all others, on this long, difficult, and beautiful journey of life, this great charge of finishing the world, which, let's be clear, on some days might look like simply listening to another story. And on a lot of days means doing the family's laundry or making meals. And on some days means witnessing to injustice and calling with love for a new way forward. It's a big job with all kinds of parts and pieces. So big that, as my story told, even God came to realize that it wasn't going to work all on God's own. So big that even those first little humans, hubristic and naive though they may have been, knew they were too small and too clueless to do it on their own. But with partners, faithful partners, now that's another possibility, a sign of hope. And if we want hope to survive in the world today, how does it go, Ryan? We've got to pray on, teach on, work on, march on, sing on, together.